Good evening and welcome to 545 Services at Henderson. It is good to be here. It's good to be before you tonight and to speak. Thank you for the opportunity, Ray and the elders. Thank you to the gentlemen who helped me out. They're good friends of mine. Joshua and I were roommates 2 years ago now. He and I know each other very well and go way back. Like I said, it's good to be here. And I've been tasked tonight with talking to you about overcoming bitterness. And this is a difficult task, but I'm glad to discuss it with you. It's difficult because I don't believe it's something that we often talk about. It's not something that we initially think of whenever we think of our own character faults. It's not something that we look for in ourselves to try to work on. It's just something that kind of sneaks up on us. And to kind of illustrate what I'm talking about there, you know, think about this. How oftentimes do you go through your day and you're just angry, you're just bitter, but you don't really think about it? But on the weekends, maybe it'll really come out in a sports game that goes really wrong. I'm thinking about the Ole Miss Auburn game this past weekend. But it's one of our strongest emotions as human beings. And we really need to take a look at it sometimes. Bitterness is that emotion that you get when things don't go your way, when things are unfair, when things don't go as planned, when you feel like the world is going against you, when you feel like everything you're working for is falling out from beneath your feet and you're angry. That's what it's about. And I think about this a lot nowadays. We're all in this transition period. We're all of us throughout life go through different changes, but especially those of us who are college students are in this transition phase where we're between youth and adulthood. And I'm enjoying this. I'm having a good time. I'm really enjoying this, thinking about the future, thinking about my job and my future wife, and thinking about what I want to do when I grow up. And I'm really enjoying this time in my life. But at the same time, it's the most jarring time of my life I've ever had. I think about the things that I go through on a daily basis, and maybe you can relate. I'm just become really aware lately of all the worry that we go through as students, all the things that we have to deal with, because I see the way I want things to go, but I'm concerned that maybe they won't go that way. Or I think about the stress that I have in my life because I have deadlines, and I know that I have to meet these deadlines or bad consequences are going to happen to me. People are going to be angry with me. I think about my own anger whenever I don't meet these deadlines, whenever I have things in my life that go wrong. And I've noticed that this is all happening as I've become a senior here at Freed. We've all been having a lot of exposure to bitterness, whether you realize it or not. I see a lot of it. I'm guilty of it myself, saying things about other clubs, saying things during making music time that maybe I don't really mean, saying things around intramural times that I don't really mean, saying things about other people that I really like, but maybe in a poor judgment scenario, I say something that's just not good. And it just goes back to not getting what you want. It just goes back to whenever something happens in making music when you don't do as well as you thought you should, and you just want to lash out. And we all experience that towards people, towards events, towards the church, towards circumstances in our lives, even towards God, we experience bitterness. And it really makes me stop and think sometimes, I didn't used to be like this. I didn't used to have to deal with anger. I didn't used to have to stop and count to 10 just to get over a particular circumstance. I don't remember extremely disliking someone because of something that they did. I don't remember growing up having these concerns. And I'm concerned sometimes that these impulses that we all have might have more of an effect on me than I care to give them. I look at my responses to the situations in my life sometimes, and I take a look at it and examine it, that I realize I can handle the emotions. I can handle feeling angry. I can handle feeling bitter and get over it. And those emotions don't control me. But the troublesome thing to me is that I know they have that potential to deeply affect me and my spirit and my relationships and my love for God and the church. Bitterness is to me maybe one of the greatest hindrances to your spiritual growth. It comes between you and God. It comes between you and other people. It comes between you and experiencing what it's like to love others. It comes between you and experiencing what it's like to love Jesus and experience His forgiveness and love in your own life. It comes between you and living the way God wants you to live and understanding the fundamental forces of Christianity, which is love and forgiveness. And it leads you into a downward spiral that Jesus wants us all to avoid completely. You can think of Matthew chapter 18, where what does it say? If someone wrongs you, go to them and confront them about it. Stomp it out before it even begins. Reconcile yourself with the people and the circumstances that go against you. I know a lot of people that don't do this, myself included. I know a lot of people that sometimes whenever something happens in their life, they're a lot like a rotten apple. I don't know, this is a great time of year to go apple picking. I don't know if any of you have done that, but this is the fall season. Apples are harvested, and sometimes, though, a few of them fall from the tree and are left there. And what happens as the week passes, as they're exposed more and more to the sun, as they're exposed more and more to the air and the dirt and the worms and the bugs, they sour and shrivel and spoil and rot. I know people like that. I know times in my life where I've been like that, where I can't control my bitterness because of life's circumstances. Maybe you can relate. Maybe you know somebody who can relate. But it makes me think of nobody wants to eat that apple. It's repulsive. You go up to it and you don't want to pick it up. It's not like a raisin, which is a grape that is left in the same situation, but it instead turns sweet and edible. It affects people. It gets under their skin. I'm reminded of something that's referred to as the chain of screaming. Maybe you're familiar with this concept, but your boss is really stressed at work. He's got clients and deadlines, and he really hates his job, and he hates all these people nagging at him. And so he takes it out on you, and it ruins your day. Makes you angry, makes you unhappy with your job, and you take that back home with you, and you express that on your spouse. Maybe she or he has done something incorrectly in the household, and it's something that just rubs you the wrong way, and you take it out on them, you lash out on them, and they in turn lash out on the kids who maybe say just the right bothersome thing. And they, in turn, it ruins their day. They take it out on the dog or their friends or whatever. You can see it happening like a ripple in a pond around you when you're bitter, that it affects the people around you. But it's not so simple sometimes. Sometimes you can't see it. Sometimes you can't see the effect that you have on other people. Sometimes you can't see what bitterness does to you. But if you take a look in your life, you can. You turn to things that make you feel better about your circumstances. You turn in on yourself. You become self-centered. You only want to nurse your own wounds because you've been hurt by somebody. And you don't want to deal with other people because maybe they'll hurt you too. You turn away from God. You don't let anybody near you. You seek ways to harm others. You say things that you don't mean. Bitterness gets in and corrupts our soul. One of the best stories I know to clearly exemplify the effects of bitterness in your life is the story of Jacob and Esau. And we all know this, hopefully, if you're familiar with this story. It's Jacob, who is Isaac's son, with his mother's help, Rachel, tricks his father Isaac into thinking that he's Esau. And why does he do this? He does this because he wants his father's blessing. Now, Esau, who is the firstborn of the two brothers, deserves this blessing. Think of it like a last will and testament. This is something that Isaac is going to bless his son with so that he'll be prosperous in his life. And while Esau is out hunting game to bring back to his father for him to eat, Rachel makes the same soup for Jacob to bring to Isaac. He makes sheepskin for Jacob to wear so that he'll appear hairy like Esau. And Isaac, in his frail state, is full and blesses Jacob instead of Esau. If I were to compare this to a situation nowadays, it would be like your brother or your sister or somebody close in your family plotting against you to hire somebody to alter your will or your parents' will so that whenever your parents pass away, they get everything instead of you. And you can just hear the pain in the passage. Turn over to Genesis 27. We'll take a look at that real quickly. Genesis 27, verses 30 through 41, we see the scenario. After Isaac finished blessing him and Jacob had scarcely left his father's presence, his brother Esau came in from hunting. He, too, prepared some tasty food and brought it to his father. Then he said to him, My father, please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing. He is so ready for this. His father Isaac asked him, Who are you? I am your son, he said, your firstborn, Esau. Isaac trembled violently and said, Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? I ate it just before you came in, and I blessed him. And indeed, he will be blessed. And I can just imagine Esau crestfallen, just whenever he hears his father's words, the scripture says, he burst out with a loud and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me too, my father. But he said, Your brother came deceitfully and took your blessing. Verse 41, Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given him. He said to himself, The days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. Could you imagine being so angry with somebody that you want to kill them? He's so bitter with Jacob in this story that he wants to seek vengeance. He's so bitter with him that he wants to take that violent road. Bitterness is dangerous because it turns us into people that we're not. We're not violent people. We're not angry people. We're not meant to be angry. We're not meant to be hateful. We're not meant to be any of that. We're made to be people that love, but when bitterness sinks in, we may not want to kill somebody, we may not want to take action like that, but our negativity will become so powerful that if it is left unchecked, it will kill your relationships, and it will kill your happiness, and it will kill your contentment. Proverbs 29 says this, A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man holds it in check. When you're angry, there are appropriate ways to express that. There are appropriate responses to have when things don't go your way. But bitterness is not one of them. If you let your anger turn into bitterness, that's the last thing you want to do. That's when your soul begins to rot like that apple. It's been left outside and a bad situation just gets worse. You hold your bitterness in check by walking side by side with your brothers and sisters. When you think about what it would do to them if you're bitter with them, realize what you do whenever you hate other people. They don't want to talk to you because they think you're angry with them. Miscommunication continues between you and them, and you're tempted to say bad things about them. The relationship crumbles. If you don't show them that you're capable of forgiveness, if bitterness is left inside you, it makes the situation fester. And we see that as the story continues in Genesis chapter 28, where we see that Jacob continues to receive guidance from Isaac. And Jacob is instructed to go find a wife in the land of his uncle. And Esau hears this and realizes that Canaanite women are disdainful to Isaac. And so he goes and marries the daughter of Ishmael, a Canaanite. His bitterness at that point becomes so much like a virus that it's infecting all of his relationships. It's not just towards Jacob anymore. It's toward his father as well. His father, who was fooled and really didn't have very much say in the matter, is now the object of Esau's bitterness. And what concerns me most about our tendency towards bitterness is what it means for our relationships. When we're bitter with the circumstances in our life, when we feel as though we've been treated unfairly, when we feel as though life is not going our way, we are more inclined to make enemies than we are to make Christians. James chapter 1, verses 19 through 20 says this, "My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires." Man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. I believe that we can all attest that we know what God's desire is for our life. His righteous desire for our life is to go out and make disciples in the name of His Son, Jesus. God's righteous desire in our life is for us to go out and show other people what it's like to love each other. That when something happens in our life that doesn't go our way because of somebody else, it means that we forgive them instead of saying something evil about them behind their back. That when somebody says something to us that upsets us, we get over it, we move on, we turn the other cheek and we show them that we love them. We know what God desires for our life, following His commands, avoiding sin, walking side by side with Jesus, letting love define us rather than hate. But it's anger and bitterness that puts us in a state of mind where sin is more likely to happen. If Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4, "In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold, and do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God with whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice." If we belong to Christ, bitterness, which has so much potential to define us, must be dealt away with. We're instead called to love others and show the light of Jesus Christ. If we're bitter, our souls become so dark that it's impossible to do this. Years pass between Jacob and Esau. They don't see each other. They don't speak to each other. They don't send each other letters telling them about their lives. They don't know each other's spouses. They don't know each other's children. Years pass. They're driven apart by their anger. They're driven apart by their bitterness into different parts of the world. And for years, they think about what they've done to each other. Turn over to Genesis 32 and we'll take a look at the conclusion of this story. Jacob also went on his way and the angels of God met him. When Jacob saw him, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named the place Mahanaim. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him. This is Genesis 32, verse 3. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, "This is what you are to say to my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says, 'I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. I have cattle and donkeys, sheep and goats, male and female servants. Now I'm sending this message to my lord that I may find favor in your eyes.'" Jacob is prepared to be repentant for what he's done. In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks in one group, the group that is left may escape. Let me back up and verse 6, the messenger returns to Jacob and he said, "We went to your brother Esau and now he's coming to meet you and 400 men are with him." Jacob's afraid for his life. His brother, whom he thinks hates him, is coming towards him with 400 men. He knows that Esau hates him for what he's done and he knows that Esau harbors bitterness toward him. But watch what happens in the next chapter, Genesis 33. When Esau comes, Jacob looks up and sees him coming with his 400 men. Verse 3, he himself went on ahead and bowed to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him, threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Verse 8, Esau asked, "What is the meaning of all these flocks and herds I met? To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." Jacob pleads with him and says, "No, please, if I have found favor in your eyes, please accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God now that you have received me favorably. Please accept the present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me and I have all I need." And Esau accepted the gift. I can only imagine the emotion in this scene. Esau and Jacob, who haven't seen each other in years, broken by the sight of each other. Esau runs to his brother and embraces him, forgetting years of hatred, years of bitterness. And he must have realized in that moment that all the anger and the bitterness was worthless. It's a waste of energy. Esau must have realized that Jacob, his own brother, feared for his life because of what he'd done to him. Esau comes to grips with everything. He comes to grips with the situation, what he's done. Instead of attacking his brother, he embraces him, and Jacob is repentant. Forgiveness is the cure to anger, to bitterness, to hatred. When we look at our situations and we realize that it's just a bump in the road, we can move on and continue to love others. When we look at what we can accomplish by loving other people instead of hating them, we can go out and show people the love of Christ. We should realize that the transformation that we have when we put on Christ in baptism means that we're no longer capable of hatred or bitterness, but only capable of sharing the same forgiveness that was given to us. The verse that was read earlier by Jacob, Jesus speaks about anger. He says, "You have heard that it was said to the people long ago," in Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 24, "You shall not murder, and anyone who murders shall be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, 'Raca,' is answerable to the court. If anyone says, 'You fool,' will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift." Back when sacrifice was part of the culture, people would come to the altar with their gift to atone for the sins that they committed. But Jesus stops them before they even go through the door and says, "If you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave it there. Be reconciled first, then come." When we come to the altar, when we come to church, when we come to pray, when we come to sing praises to God, when we come to think about Jesus before taking communion, what are we bringing to the altar with us? Am I holding on to grudges that are years old? Am I holding on to things that I need to let go of? Am I holding on to hatred in my heart because I can't get over the circumstances in my life? Am I more like a sour apple right now, or more like a raisin that becomes more sweet the more I am exposed? So, you know, if there's anyone in his life who deserved to be bitter, it was Jesus. Look at the sin in your life. Look at the things that you've done. Look at the history that our history as the human race, look at what we've done to each other. Look at the things that we made Jesus go through. If there's anyone who had the right to be bitter, it was him. But instead, he took our bitterness on himself. And the only bitterness that Jesus ever experienced in this life was the bitter cup of suffering that we put him through. The only bitterness in Jesus' life that he experienced was the bitter wine vinegar that was lifted up to him on the cross while he died for your sins. He forsook all other bitterness, so that we could have the opportunity to forgive our enemies and love others because He first forgave and loved us. Leave your anger behind you. Let it go. Be at peace today. And I hope that somebody at least this resonates with, because it resonates with me as well. I don't want to be a bitter person. I don't want to be somebody who's known for my anger. I don't want to be somebody who lets my bitterness get the best of me. I hope that we can all desire to be more like Christ and forgive our enemies and love each other. If there's any way that we can help you do these things today, won't you please come as we stand and as we sing?